Hello and welcome to Father Figures, the show about parenthood with an emphasis on fatherhood, uncommon fathers, fathers of all stripes. Here we explore the joys and the griefs, the risks and the rewards of being a dad. Some men are biological fathers, others are fathers through desire, responsibility, want of family, or something else. But they seek fatherhood, not always successfully. My guest on this episode has managed to help raise two kids into adulthood, and he's done it successfully. His name is Rick Wallace, and as usual, I asked him where he's from.
So I was born in California, fabulous Fresno, California.
You've been here how long? Was that
4 years?
Four. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell me about your dad. What was he like?
My dad was a basic working stiff. He was a classic Okie, yeah. In that he was born in Oklahoma, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and came to California with his entire family. His mom and dad moved the whole family, and so he was, and he was pretty much a blue collar working stiff sort of guy.
Yeah,
he worked in the wholesale electrical business for many years, yeah. You know, supplying contractors with the stuff they need to build homes and buildings, electrical yeah. stuff. So yeah. It's kind of where I got my start. That was influential in my beginnings with fascination with machines and yeah. science and stuff like that.
Now, did you have a desire to be a father?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, sure. Okay, cool. Sure.
I thought about it at a pretty young age. I kind of felt, I'm sure like many children do, that life was very unfair to me. And just generally speaking, I don't think my parents were, particularly different than most folks' parents from that era. Mm-hmm. I don't see them as anything but just kind of regular folks. But they sure didn't spare the rod. Or things like that.
And was it your father who administered the punishment?
Both. They were equal administrators.
Oh, and how did they administer?
Well, sometimes my mother would depend on my father to deliver, to come home and take off the belt. And usually it was a belt.
A belt.
Yeah. You know, you had to bend over and get a couple of whacks with the belt. Mm-hmm. Or there were times where certainly they got angry at the bad stuff we did, and mm-hmm. okay. it wasn't such a formal reaction, yeah. so to speak.
All right, so you've let's get into your fatherhood here. How many kids do you have?
I have two.
Two, a boy and a girl.
Yeah, that's right. My son is 28. My daughter is 36.
Okay.
Thinking as a young person about uh-huh. parenthood, because uh-huh. certainly I developed some opinions early on that, that influenced my parenting much, much later in life. Mm-hmm. Because, again, I had, as I mentioned, I just felt it was really unfair. First of all, the way kids were generally treated, which wasn't uncommon to hear parents call their children names or mm. strike them. I think that's a sign of the times. And mm-hmm. I don't know how much different it is today. I honestly don't know. Yeah. But I remember thinking, even as a young person there, that that's not going to be me. I'm not going to do that. Having this sort of sense of outrage about it. And, mm-hmm. I was able to follow through with that. It really did.
Well, that's good. You never had to take off your belt.
I never did. Not That's once. I never struck either one of my children. So, again, it was an opinion that was formed early, and I stand by it today. I don't think you can teach children to be loving, honest human beings if you strike them and call them names when they're young.
Right.
It sets a tone that they will never recover from.
Yeah.
I don't hold anything against my folks. The way things turned out, I love them for being my parents, but I'm a different person probably than mm-hmm. what they expected. And I think that sometimes that comes across. I think that realization that your kids are going to turn out to be different than what you expect is a hard thing to swallow sometimes. it was fairly late in life. I didn't get married. I did get married pretty young. I got married at 25, but that marriage didn't produce any offspring. We were only married for a few years, and because of the business I was in, which was touring with rock and roll bands, the live audio business, which is a very unforgiving sort of business to be in, that you know, there certain holidays and what have you are actually big show days, and artists perform on those days regularly. And so it's hard on some people if they have a different expectation. It was hard for people to deal with that. So first marriage didn't last long. So I had a friend. So I'll tell you how my daughter came about. Sometimes you just have to take personal responsibility, and it sort of trumps everything else in your life. If you're going to take responsibility, then it means you sort of drop what you're doing and do something new.
That's not only for the good of you and your own family, but it's for the community as well.
Definitely. Well, you know, if all fathers and mothers took their responsibility at a heightened level and always gave their all to take care of kids, we wouldn't have half the problems we do.
Yeah.
I just believe that deeply, that
I do.
There's a real lack of strong parenting. With my daughter, you know, I had a chance encounter of it, an off-the-cuff encounter under weird circumstances with a longtime friend. And this involved, circumstances where we drank too much and had sex. It's just that simple. Nobody saw it coming. Never got together afterwards or whatever. And I lived in California at the time. I was just home in Seattle doing some, a little short vacation it was the holidays or something along those lines. And so I left, you know, the event happened and didn't think anything about it, and I left. And this young lady called me, 9 months later and said, "Hey, by the way, I just want you to know that I was pregnant and that I just had this child, and it's yours." So, you know, because of the timing, of course I scrambled, like, wait, what? But it was pretty obvious by timing of things and what she said that, you know, there was a chance, there was a more than a good chance. Mm-hmm. And she was, I knew her, I knew Chris well, so I didn't, you wouldn't think that she would be lying about it. And maybe she, looking back, maybe she just didn't know. I wasn't the only little liaison that she had during that period, obviously. I wasn't. Obviously, hindsight's 2020, huh? You know, I packed up in L.A. and I came back to Seattle, and I engaged in trying to help raise Alexandra as best I could. I worked locally. I did what I could to help her mom with, cash. That was basically what it came down to. Spend as much time as I could, but again, rock and roll is a sort of unforgiving thing. When the opportunities come along, you got to go.
Yeah.
And if you don't go, you never get another opportunity. So eventually, I got busy again, and I just had to go out and do and work. That's just how it was. And so her mother, unbeknownst to me, and they just, I was disengaged enough, I didn't realize how bad it was, but her mother had become involved with drugs. And was, a crack cocaine user, and just really devolved as a person, really lost her touch with reality and became a severe drug user. And over the course of a few years, got herself in trouble. Alexandra, by that time, had moved in. When I first got word of it, it was when she moved in with her grandmother. And her grandmother really raised her from about 4 years on, years old on. So, but later, once Alexandra was about 10 years old, her mom got in real serious trouble. And, they got deep into the family court where they finally said, "Well, where's the father? And let's do DNA tests, and we have to do the standard stuff." And So when the DNA test came back, it was negative. She mm-hmm. wasn't my daughter. Mm-hmm. I was like 99.999% sure that I could not have fathered the child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this was the 80s, mid-80s or something like that, so pretty new technology. Mm-hmm. Kind of hard to believe. I mean, yeah. Some ways you don't want to believe it.
Did you feel guilty for doing the rock and roll touring while...
I'm sure everybody thought that there might be a big change. That might constitute a big change because it would release me. In some ways, it did release me. Like the mm-hmm. court couldn't force me to pay child support, mm-hmm. which I had records of all the money that I'd given her mother anyway. I'd kept good records, and they recognized that, you know, that I was there. I wasn't going away. I was involved. It yeah. wasn't like I was an absentee father. Mm-hmm. So I just kept doing what I had done in the past, and it didn't change anything. And we're still very, very close, and, you know, talk regularly. I see her regularly a couple times a year, and we're just very close.
That's great.
So it's, I mean, she has very nice things to say about me. You know,
well,
I don't.
Cool.
You know, and she shows and shares her love with me regularly. You know, interestingly, Alexandra, she found her birth father, her biological father. You know, her and like her and me and many other Americans, we tested our DNA other ways by signing up for Ancestry or whatever
yeah.
it was. You know,
right?
And it was through Ancestry that her biological father was identified.
Wow.
And
what did she do?
Well, they made contact.
Oh, okay.
And they are in contact, but it hasn't turned out to be, I mean, he has his own family.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm sure.
Another, a second or third wife, you know, from the time when she was born. His own kids, they're grown as well. So it's... So, but I know they're in touch and they talk. I met him once a couple Christmases ago.
Yeah.
Very nice guy.
That's great.
You know, so, you know, kind of the reason I brought it up is it sort of follows on with my son, what happened with my son.
Yeah, go ahead.
So much of my experience with my daughter really sort of affected, you know, my next relationship with a mother child situation. I don't want to call it a situation. You know, I met a woman. She was and fell in love with her, and she had a young son. And this was later in life. I'd moved to living in Athens, Georgia, and doing a lot of music stuff there, working at the University of Georgia. And she was also my son Clayton, his mother was also an employee there, and I had seen her, but I didn't know her. And I had then got close enough to her once to have a little chat and asked her out, like, you know, post-work beer or something like that. And she said, I can't, sorry, I've got to get home. I got to go pick up my kid. I'm like, I kind of remember saying, bring him. I don't care, you know, but anyway, that was, nothing more was said. And about a month later, there was an outdoor event, a festival, weekend-long festival on the streets of Athens. And I ran into her and Clayton. And Clayton was just 4 years old at the time.
Yeah, okay.
He was a tyke. Yeah, he was he was very much still a tyke.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got to talking, and I asked her again. You know, I'd met, I spent a couple of hours with him, and, you know, I realized that, you know, I really wanted to get to know her better. And so I asked her, you know, for a date or whatever, and she said, you know, it's just really tough with Clayton. And I said, well, you know, and I had an epiphany that
and
sort of experiencing the epiphany again.
Wow. Do you have some Kleenex down here, buddy?
Hung out with them for a few hours. You know, got to know them, got to know Clayton a little bit, and then asked his mother to get together again. And, you know, she demurred because she had Clayton. She said, well, it's just really tough. I can't afford a babysitters and stuff like that. So I said, well, and at that moment I had this epiphany, you know, like truly one, I've only had maybe two or three other times in life where I really, you know, instantly like the whole future kind of opened up and, you know, had a brief glimpse. And
what did you see?
It was a powerful moment.
Yeah.
It's a powerful moment still just to think about it. And so, you know, I just told her, hey, look, you got to just bring him along. You know, it's if I want to get together with you, then it's like I want to get together with you both. And so it didn't take very long for us to really that relationship to gel. And they had been through a rough time. Her guy that she was married to previous to that had abused them in, you know, physically and mentally abused them. And as they would soon find out, and both like suffering from PTSD, and so had some, there were some issues sort of kind of behavioral, not bad issues, but, you know, I was dealing with a child, a small child who was basically living in fear, especially of, you know, mom's boyfriend or whatever role a child of four thinks assigns to that.
Yeah.
Definitely wasn't dad at first. He had mostly fear. So it took a lot of just openly, you know, accepting him and holding on to him and giving him love and physical attention to sort of break those things down. And it did eventually.
Yeah.
It did. We became super close. And
now, what was the living situation at the time? Were they living away from you, or were you living together? Or
We lived apart only for about 6 months or so, 5 months, and then I moved in with them. And they, at that time, Annalie had a house. She owned her home. But she, you know, always had to rent out a room to somebody. And at that time, she had another abusive drug user type of situation. And after sort of dealing with it on the side for a few months while the relationship was growing, and I finally just stepped in and said, you know, that's it. That person has to go. Got to go. I'll be the one, you know. I'll be the one to force them to go. You got to go. And so get up the same time every day, you know, eat at the same time every day. Get real structure in the lives so that they could calm down and not fear small change and not fear situational changes that are innocuous, basically. But if you're on the edge, it sets kids off, you know. They don't want to do stuff. They don't want to be involved.
Yeah.
They don't want to play. Then, you know. So it just took a lot of, you know, hard personal
attention.
Just attention. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
You know, I had to do some other things. I had to intervene in his life in some other ways because. Again, his mom was not a tyrant, but she was in the spank phase, and I put a stop to that. I said, "That's it. We're no more spanking." And again, she wasn't a tyrant, not a horrible person by any means, but she could be a little bit of a name caller, you know, and she would escalate situations that really didn't need to be escalated. It's amazing what four-year-olds can figure out, what they'll say and do. You know, it's really totally mind-blowing. And one thing that was always interesting about Clayton is me being a California boy and being a West Coast thinker and basically a liberal. and then living in a place like Georgia, where Clayton's family was from, and all his uncles and grandmothers and sisters and cousins, and everybody being super Southern, and which is, you know, cool and homey and has its advantages, but it definitely has some disadvantages from, you know, the way people think and lifestyles. And
stuff. Now, did that seep into Clayton and you had to extract it? Or
well, part of it he naturally rebelled against. He's always been a very fair person. You know, even as a kid, he was very much into the fairness. So he's really one of those guys that's colorblind. He just doesn't see race and or gender. You know, he just takes people at face value. And that served him well and still serves him well. I mean, I think it's one of his advantages in life right now is that he's just a very outgoing, positive person in general. I mean, for my son, his biggest problem is just having faith in himself.
Yeah.
We talk about it all the time. We talk, you know, a couple times a week at least. I talk to him on the phone a couple times a week, sometimes daily. Yeah. And I'm fine with that. You know, that's cool. But he believes in other things and other people sort of more deeply than himself sometimes.
So Clayton is doing well now, I assume.
Clayton does well, yeah. Both my kids are doing great.
That's wonderful.
Both my kids are doing great. They're got jobs. They're my daughter, my grandson, Sawyer, he's an awesome character.
Yeah.
And, he and I are close, as close as we can be he lives in Texas.
Yeah.
But
this is something that came up in a previous episode, in that I had a guest who wasn't a father, had never been a father, didn't want to be a father, had no father. And he was talking about his mother and how he was raised by his mother and how after he turned 18, it was like over. You know, the parent role was over. And I mean, do you have a sense of a parent role that continues or is it like, okay, they've left the nest, they're gone, they're doing well, they're working, they have, you know, they're not unhoused.
I don't have any sense of my parenting role ending by any means.
Oh, good. Yeah, I
still feel closely connected. They both still, you know, ask me for advice and sometimes money.
Now, do you have any advice for fathers out there?
Well, I do, and that is that you have to get up every day trying to do better. You just cannot. You have to be unrelenting in the efforts that you make for your children. While they're children, there's just no way you can do enough for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about money, per se, how Big Brother in the sky is going to take care of things, because it's just not going to happen. Yeah. As we've all seen, how times can change, and not as certain institutions are eroded because of a lack of faith in them. The institutions, not like church institutions, but the scientific institutions and the institutions that back up parents, which, you know, everybody who's got a sick kid, I mean, if you're not rich, you don't have killer insurance, then you need Medicaid to take care of your kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm still blown away that people think that vaccinations are a thing that they can avoid. It just absolutely blows my mind. Yeah. No, people, you cannot avoid those things. Get your kids vaccinated. You know, before they get the measles or the mumps, then ruins their hearing and their livers at the age of 7 or 8. So science, all the things that we grew up with, believing in and striving towards, seem to be, some of those things seem to be have been devalued. So as a father of today, it's important, I think it's the most important thing is to keep your eye on the target of educating your kids and giving them a chance at a better life. Not all kids are going to take a 4-year track to education. I mean, there's being a plumber or an electrician is absolutely just as valid.
What have you learned? What do you know now that you would not have known if you'd not been a father?
The fact that I didn't have to go through those things, I'm actually thankful for. I mean, I see that as an amazing thing. I can't imagine what my life had been without those experiences. I can't imagine where I'd be. I would be probably not somebody you wanted to know or talk to, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, kids are grounding, you know.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Humbling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's an experience that's difficult to convey to others who do not participate in that, you know?
Well, you can't.
No.
There's nothing to share. You're always going to come off as you're like trying to tell somebody something special anyway, you know? Yeah. It's like if you never had kids, you're single, you're never going to go there. There's got to be some little part of you that misses that. You know, there's some part of the human psyche that is absolutely hardwired to procreate and to raise children and to be a functional member of a cohesive whole thing.
Thank you for listening to KMUN. It's an audio oasis for many of us. I hope you had the chance to participate in our latest pledge drive. It really helps to make our shows better. I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautics.com for the music, and I want to especially thank Rick Wallace for being a forthcoming guest. And remember, if you'd like to drop me a line, you can do so at RadioRanchero@gmail.com. I answer all my mail. Let me know if you know any extraordinary dads. Maybe it's you. So until next time, remember, the days may be long, but the years are short. I hope you had the chance to participate in our latest pledge drive. It really helps to make our shows better. I want to thank Jason Shaw of Audionautics.com for the music, and I want to especially thank Rick Wallace for being a forthcoming guest. And remember, if you'd like to drop me a line, you can do so at RadioRanchero@gmail.com. I answer all my mail. So until next time, remember, the days may be long, but the years are short. Bye-bye.